And welcome back. You're tuned in to the HBCU Nation Radio Show, and I'm your host, Anthony Ray. So glad to have you join the broadcast today. And we're blessed to have with us, joining us for this segment, our good friends, Mel and Pearl Shaw. When you are ready to build a fund development program and grow your fundraising or increase board engagement, you need to be sure to connect with Mel and Pearl Shaw at saudandshaw.com. Mel and Pearl, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Anthony. It's good to be back.
Always great to be here.
Absolutely. We're glad that you guys are here with us today. We're going to be talking about a piece that you posted here recently, and folk can read it themselves at saudandshaw.com. It's entitled HBCU Leadership, The Revolving Door. Great piece. Gosh, you guys, again, I appreciate all that you do in your effort to help us understand how not only do we address our fund development concerns, but you also help us in terms of understanding how to increase board engagement and how that all fits the piece and the real stuff that's behind running an institution of higher education. So we appreciate all that you do. Now, I want folks to know that before we begin our conversation on HBCU leadership, and you guys have entitled this The Revolving Door, it is it's part one of a three-part series. And what you have written here, as you point out in your piece, is that this actually represents your observations related to the challenges facing executive leaders at HBCUs, and these observations were gained over recent decades, if you will, working within and with HBCUs, and you guys wanted to share your observations as a way to help contextualize the conversation that we're about to have in terms of helping current and potential presidents and the boards who hire support and evaluate them. Isn't that right?
Absolutely, Anthony. The thing, you know, we always get questions. The question is, what's going on the Black College campus? What's happening to the presidents? You know, I was there 6 months ago and before, and now there's a change. And we see this pattern really all over it in the work that we do. And we just thought we would just stop and share our observation as to what's going on from our vantage point. And I'll let Pearl get into the detail on it, but it's just something that we encounter all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, Pearl, as you point out in your piece, running an institution of higher education is like running a multi-million-dollar business. And you know that, as you point out, there are all kinds of negotiations for property and talent and capital and innovation and partnerships, but you know it takes a special level of focus, if you will, to be able to carry out these responsibilities and expectations that put on these HBCU presidents.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think the days of a college president being just so well known for their academics and for their institutional leadership, unfortunately, that day has changed. And what we don't often talk about is the need to take care of the business and to allocate at least 50% of time to fundraising. And so that becomes, this impossible task that you're asking people to take on. But what we're saying is people can blame a president, like, well, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? We wanted you to do this. We wanted you to do that. And we just say, well, first of all, let's look at how much resources are you actually giving this person to do what needs to be done? So if you're working with an institution that's historically and currently under-resourced, and then you expect the person to pull a rabbit out of the hat, and you know people always say, we expect you to hit the ground running. And you're like, well, with what kind of support?
Right.
With what?
Right. Hit the ground running, but running, you might be running from something. Let me start running with something. But Mel, again, lack of resources. Now, that has, as you point out, this has to be the number one challenge facing HBCUs, and no one person can change that.
Right, Anthony, and we always point back to the board. You know, the board in most cases should represent 10 to 20% of the income coming to the institution. Their main responsibility beyond oversight is to assure the financial health of the institution. And unfortunately, in most of the HBCUs that we have encountered, the board is not in a position to do that. You know, they have great profile and they have great history in their own areas of expertise. But when it comes to bringing resources, especially financial resources, to the institution, they're just not in a position to do that. And so the finger pointing began. And they said, well, we brought the president on and we brought the VP for advancement to assure and to solve that problem. But it's a joint partnership, with the idea that the president and VP for advancement, but members of the board would team together to bring the necessary resources. But unfortunately, it kind of falls off when you turn back to say, board members, how are you going to help? What are you going to do to make a difference in the financial health of this institution? And right now, that we see that as the number one challenge that a potential president or a president that running an institution now, they just cannot rely on the board to open those necessary doors, especially financially, to make a difference. And we're saying at the end of the day, regardless of all the academic expertise and those kinds of things, the bottom line is, how much did you raise to advance the institution? What resources were you able to bring to the institution so that you can sustain and grow the institutions? And we're not trying to shy away from all of the wonderful programs and things that are being positioned on these institutions. But if you don't have the finance, that doesn't mean anything either. Eventually, it'll just puff and go away because you don't have the dollars to do that. And again, I'm stressing that we need to look very hard at our board of trustees, look at the diversity. Do we really have people of power, wealth, and influence who can make the difference and support that president?
Mm. That's the bottom line. Just act that is the bottom line. And that is of interest, and we ought to take that of note. And Pearl, you guys point out in your piece that today's top leaders need C-suite business experience in addition to educational experience, leadership. You kind of touched on that at the very beginning. And sort of, if you would, elaborate a little bit further on that, this whole paradigm shift that we're looking, that needs to take place in terms of the leadership requirements.
Well, it's just to say that we are in every aspect of business, including the educational sector, requirements have changed. The pace has picked up, and you just have to stay current on so many things: business modeling, finance, fundraising. I mean, just can your CFO run different models for you? What are you not seeing that you might be able to use? Do you need to focus more on lobbying? I mean, I don't know, but the requirements are so different, and it also means not one person with that experience, but a team. So if you say to the president, you need to be out there 50 to 80% fundraising, then who is doing these other things that we traditionally assume a president will do and do with ease? You know, you need your chief operating officer, your chief of staff. You need people with just diverse high-level expertise, and sometimes, you know, it's a challenge of I might have those skills, but how am I going to be successful in this environment? And that goes back to what Melvin was saying. Is there conflict within the board? Is there conflict between the institution and the community? Are the people going to surround the president, open doors for her, and march with her? Because you can't ask a president, oh, hey, this is great, have a job, make less, way, 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 way less than you would make in a private sector, and make all, everything go away by, oh, next Tuesday. It's.
And let me just share this and piggyback on what Pearl is saying. When we talk to major funders and institutions of higher education, especially black colleges and universities, the funder most will ask now, which we hadn't heard in the past, what is the business plan for this institution to sustain and grow? You know, you always hear, you know, the academic side and the strategic side and the recruiting side, but very little talk about what is the business plan to generate revenue, to generate more students, to generate a more diverse audience. What are you selling? What is the business plan? And that seemed to be has either we're not aware or it has gotten lost in the overall development of the institution. And this is, again, where, you know, either the board or the president has to be in a position to address and implement it.
If you're just joining us, you're tuned in to the HBCU Nation Radio Show, and I'm your host, Anthony Ray. Glad to have you join the broadcast today. And joining us for this segment are our good friends Mel and Pearl Shaw of Saad and Shaw Development. Now, we're talking about a piece that they posted recently entitled HBCU Leadership, the Revolving Door. And our conversation is really based upon observations related to the challenges facing executive leaders at HBCUs and what Mel and Pearl have gained, if you will, over recent years working within and with HBCUs, and they share what they've been able to glean to help contextualize the conversation and to help current and potential presidents and the boards who hire them and support them and evaluate them to be able to understand how to do so more effectively. Mel and Pearl Shaw, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anthony. It's good to be here.
Great to be here. Great to be with your audience.
Absolutely. And again, we appreciate all that you do. And, you know, really, this is just an incredible conversation. It always is when we have you guys come on and talk and share with us. And not only do you help build a fund development program for HBCUs or nonprofits who are interested in retaining your services and teaching, helping to understand how to grow their fundraising or to increase board engagement right there. Increasing board engagement. Gosh, listen, Mel, let's continue in that vein of the conversation right here. How important, again, is it to be able to do just that, increasing the board engagement and helping them to get up to the point where they are actually serving in a way that is going to really make a difference?
Well, you know, Anthony, I go back to, and this is something that I learned early in my day. I had a mentor who said, no CEO or college president can obtain greatness by stumbling over his board. And that has haunted me forever in my 50 years of being in the nonprofit arena, and especially working with HBCUs. To me, you know, first of all, the chair of the board and the president has to be joined at the hip. But the reality of it, if you don't have people, again, and I know I'm sounding like a broken record.
That's why I brought it back around, though, because I went back
you
around.
You certainly can get a lot of free advice and you get a lot of wisdom.
Right.
But if that board member is not in a position to help you generate income for the institution. First of all, they have to make a meaningful gift.
Right.
If they're not in a position to make a meaningful gift to the institution, you got the wrong person.
Right.
And, you forever have to pursue finding those individuals who have an interest in and believe in you as a president Beyond that, but back you financially. If they can't do it, they certainly need to be in a position so that they can influence giving. And you always have to stop and say, let's take a look here. What has the board done? First of all, are they giving at 100%? Or are they giving meaningful gifts? Does the board give or collect or raise 10 to 20% of your annual fund? If that doesn't happen, Anthony, then it's time to stop and take a look and look hard at yourself, meaning board members. Are we the right people to help advance this institution versus, taking advantage of all of the ceremonial and pluses by being associated with an institution, but in your heart of hearts, you know that you did not affect the bottom line. And only way a successful president can really
That's
make a
it.
difference
Right.
is having those individuals, whether they're board members, advisory friends, alumni, who can write a meaningful check.
That's the bottom line, right, Pearl? Okay, so she mailed it, says, listen. And that is so powerful because we, an individual that has the capacity to be able to do such do that, typically there are people within his sphere of influence that he or she reach out to, and they become then friends of the institution that they support. How it all works, and how important is that, Pearl, those kind of relationships?
Well, it's just critical, and think about it this way too. When you're recruiting a president, if the president isn't from the area where, your school is, how do you welcome that person? How do you introduce that person to the stakeholders? How do you set up meetings and forums, introduce them to decision makers and people of power, wealth, and influence? It doesn't mean that everybody isn't valuable because everybody is. But sometimes we forget that there's the financial side of running an institution. So when you use as, quote, the business model that we're tuition driven, you're very limited and you're at risk. So at what point do your fixed costs, exceed the revenue from your enrollment, and what's going to jeopardize your enrollment? So you have to bringing people in. I like the word Melvin said, we always encourage people to think about advisory councils. Everybody of value doesn't have to be on the board, but you do need a diversity of leadership surrounding the president, and I would say also actively involved. So, like, do you sit and wait for the board package to come? Does the institution send out the board package, or is the president working, I mean, the board chair working with the president to look at what's on our agenda? So how much is the board chair driving the activity of the board as opposed to being ceremonial responsible, and the office of the president creates the agenda and drives it? So does the board chair and board members hold each other accountable to the strategic plan? Do they hold the president accountable and say, hey, we all said we were going to do X. Where are we? Not where are you? Where are we in advancing this? So those are just some of the things we look at because it has to be a we. You can't devolve into finger pointing. It's not about blame. It's about saying there historically haven't been enough resources. There aren't enough right now coming to these institutions. There's resources out there. I mean, we read about it all the time, about it, fabulous investments people make, but they're not necessarily making them right now consistently to HBCUs, and particularly private ones have some additional challenges.
And Anthony, we always were, well, we hear the excuses when we're on campus. Well, the president is very involved in programs, but the president just does not like fundraising. They do not like to make the ask. The chair of the board loves special events and the alumni dinners, but afraid to ask. If you hear those kinds of words, then it's almost like you better run. You know what I mean? Because the number one job of the college president and the chair of the board is to make the ask. They should be preoccupied 24 hours a day as to who should we be reaching out to, when do we make the ask, who is the right person to make the ask. If they're not preoccupied with those kind of concerns, Anthony, you're in trouble.
That's
as simple as that. You're in trouble. There is no other excuse. You can't get, you know, put things in front of. The bottom line is bringing resources to the institution, and especially HBCUs. We don't have the wealth and the history of wealth where, you know, alumni and money comes down from generation to generation. It's every time we go out, we're almost dealing with a new element of fundraising and resources, that kind of thing. So it's the type of fundraising that we have to do to inspire our alum, to friends and associates. And then we're also plagued with another problem. The alumni that comes to our institution or part of our institution, they've been saddled with debt. Most of their life. So you can't reach out to them and say, well, would you consider $100,000 to the institution, blah, blah. They don't have it. They'll just be in a position to do it, but still we have to do the job of cultivating and getting them involved so when they're in a position to do it, hopefully it will mean something at the end of the day.
Mel and Pearl Shaw, they are the owners of the Sod and Saw Fund Development Corporation, and they are all about helping you to build a fund development program and to grow your fundraising or increase board engagement. They're there. Visit them at sodandshaw.com. Our good friends, Mel and Pearl Shaw, thanks so much as always for joining the broadcast and helping us to be able to understand what we need to understand about fund development and philanthropy. Thank you so much for all that you do.
And thank you for again having us. We really appreciate the opportunity.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. God bless. Until next time, take care, guys.